Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Ressa testifies on the attacks on press freedom and the bloody war on drugs in the Philippines before a U.S. Senate panel. Detained activist and community doctor Natividad Castro set free for lack of evidence. We'll have the spokesperson of the Philippine National Police to react to this development. Retired Supreme Court Senior Associate Justice Antonio Carpio challenges President Duterte to order tax officials to go after the Marcoses over their unpaid estate taxes. And Ukraine and the West accuse Russia of using the ongoing peace talks to regroup and launch fresh attacks. Hi, I'm Camina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, Nobel laureate and Filipino journalist Maria Ressa testifies before a U.S. Senate panel on the state of freedom of expression in Asia. She highlighted the attacks on press freedom here in the Philippines and President Duterte's bloody drug war. Our North America Bureau Chief TJ Manotok now joins us for the highlights. TJ, over to you. Good afternoon from Manila.
Good evening from San Francisco, Carmina. And you're right, Raptor CEO and 2022 Nobel Peace Laureate Maria Ressa was one of the three resource persons who testified in person today at the U.S. Senate for their hearing on the assault on freedom of expression in Asia at the Foreign Relations Committee. Now, Ressa testified for 11 minutes as she detailed the assaults on press freedom in the Philippines in recent years, highlighting her personal challenges of the numerous court cases against her, the alleged government harassment of Rappler, as well as the non-renewal of the ABS-CBN franchise. Ressa also noted violence in the streets in the Philippines with the Duterte drug war and the detention of Senator Leyla de Lima.
Remember Senator Leyla de Lima, a former justice secretary and head of the Commission on Human Rights? Last month began her sixth year in prison. Amnesty International calls her a prisoner of conscience. Or young journalist Frenchie Mae Cumpio, who spent her last two birthdays in prison. Or my former colleague Jess Malabanan, you referenced. He was killed by a bullet to his head. He worked on Reuters' drug war series that won a Pulitzer Prize. Or ABS-CBN, the largest broadcaster in the Philippines, a newsroom I headed for 6 years, which in 2020 lost its franchise to operate. The last time that happened was when Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law in 1972.
Ressa's main appeal to U.S. lawmakers, take action ASAP to rein in tech companies as countries on the front lines need the help badly.
On Thursday, March 24th, last week, the European Union hammered out the last details of the Market Services Act to be followed by the Digital Services Act. It's the most comprehensive legislation to put guardrails around tech. But these will take time. Right now, I appeal to U.S. legislators to reform or revoke Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act because we at the front lines need immediate help.
For his part, Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts thanked Ressa and other witnesses from Hong Kong and the NGO The Freedom House for their sacrifices in taking the risks to speak out.
Around the world, freedom of expression, one of the underpinnings of democracy, is under attack. We've seen that countries throughout Asia-Pacific region have become models for repression and censorship. In Cambodia, Burma, the Philippines, Hong Kong, and China, authoritarian leaders seek to cement their power at the expense of the people, relentlessly crushing dissent and silencing opposition. They have weaponized laws to bring those who speak out to heel, to inspire self-censorship, to sow fear and discord, often under the veneer of the legal system. We cannot protect democracy at home or abroad if we do not protect the right to nonviolent self-expression and freedom of the press. But the United States must do more to push back against the authoritarian playbook of repression and hold up these values as a focal point of American foreign policy.
Camina, this Section 230 is really at the crux of this discussion, and it's been a hot debate here in the U.S. even since the time of President Donald Trump because, you know, without getting senators on both sides of the aisle on board, it's something very difficult to repeal. And the irony of all this is an old law from 1996 that was made to protect the internet from child pornography. And yet now it is basically, bluntly put, the most important law protecting free internet speech. Carmina?
All right. Interesting discussion you had as well with another media petitioner a couple of days back, DJ. But I do want to focus on the fact that freedom of expression has also been weaponized by some, and the result is disinformation. Mm-hmm. And you have the SOT of Maria Ressa there, the soundbite of Maria Ressa there, calling on the U.S. to rein in some tech companies, to put in some regulations. But the question is, DJ, how feasible is it at this point to have those safeguards, to have those mechanisms in place so that disinformation won't spread as easily, or the hope is that it will spread to its end? TJ?
Well, if you think about it, using technology, you'd think that these tech companies are the biggest and the best tech companies all over the world. They have the biggest, the best and the brightest, you know, software developers and whatnot, that you may think it's easy to create some kind of software or artificial intelligence to detect fake news, to detect disinformation and block it off. But in my conversations last week with UCLA professor Dr. Ramesh Sinibasan, who's been at the forefront of this, of studying the rise of social media and the intersections of society, culture, and politics for the last 15 years, he said it's virtually impossible to make any kind of technology that can root out disinformation, that can root out lies. And it's just going to be so tricky and in too many gray areas that a piece of technology cannot do that. It will really need human intervention. Now, when you talk about human intervention, how can that be done with millions and millions of bytes of data going through the internet, going through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram every single hour? So for his part and his colleagues, this is an out-of-the-box solution that he was using, a suggestion. Treat them, make them a public utility. Therefore, somehow, at least on the back end, you could argue that they will be liable for certain things, but again, this Section 230 is such a powerful blanket law that they can just hide behind this for a very long time. Because basically what it says, Carmina, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. Meaning, anything put on Facebook or on Twitter, Facebook and Twitter is never going to be liable for what was written there, no matter how fake, untrue, or harmful or damaging it may be to a person, entity, organization, or even a country. So that is how powerful that law is.
And also, if you take the discussion even further, I mean, if you put human intervention there, that's going to amount to some sort of censorship, essentially.
Yes.
And that's to counter the very reason why there is this argument. It's freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. Very tricky.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, you know, Senator Markey is a Democrat. He had on his side, at least in the committee there, supporting, you know, the fact-finding Senator Mitt Romney, who's a Republican from Utah. Mm. But even here in the U.S., this particular section of this law has been hotly debated because the Republicans don't want this taken out because they want to keep their freedom of speech. And they've been accused by the Democrats of misinformation and untruths, right? So just right then and there, the discussion here in the U.S., It seems unlikely that they're going to get support from the other side of the aisle to repeal this to protect other nations, because right here on their own soil, they still want to protect that freedom of speech, and they don't want the government or any tech company regulating that speech, whether in real time or afterwards.
I guess the very case study we could look at is what happened just a couple of months back when various social media platforms tried their best to sort of put former President Donald Trump in his place. Well, what did he do after that? He created his own social media network.
Exactly. So, because he has the freedom to do so. Yeah, based on this law, based on this section in that law, that he can make another internet company, make his own guidelines. Because remember, they took him out of the platform because they're a private company and they felt that it was too much overboard. It for them, it caused the January 6th insurrection, and that's why they pulled the plug, blocked his tweets, you know, blocked his account indefinitely, and he made his own company right now. So they have their own platform now with their own rules and regulations, again, protected by the very same law, protected by the very same Section 230 that you can hide behind for freedom of speech on the internet.
Very interesting development right there. Thank you so much. Your North America Bureau Chief, TJ Manotok, joining us this afternoon live from San Francisco. Thanks, TJ. Take care and keep safe. Well, back here at the newsroom, a community doctor and human rights activist freed after being detained for over a month at a police station in Agusan del Sur. Dr. Natividad Castro is now back in Metro Manila after a court adjudged the kidnapping and serious illegal detention cases against her. The court said the complaints failed to prove Castro's participation in the alleged illegal detention of a certain Bernabe Salahay. The court adds Castro's right to due process was violated when she did not receive a subpoena for her preliminary investigation.
Law enforcers should, as much as possible, follow the guidelines of how arrests should be effected. You could not really find any involvement of Dr. Nati there because her name was just added out of the blue. In other words, it was just superimposed. And while it is true that there were several amended judicial affidavits done by the prosecutor's office, still there is no direct evidence that connects Dr. Nati to all these allegations.
Well, let's get the side of the Philippine National Police on the release of community doctor Natividad Castro. Joining us now, the spokesperson of the PNP Police, Colonel Jean Fajardo. Colonel, good afternoon to you. Thanks for taking our call. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Mancarina, and to all your viewers and listeners.
All right, so the controversial arrest of Dr. Natividad Castro, after that had happened, you now have this recent development. The Bayugan City RTC Branch 7 found no probable cause against Dr. Castro. She was detained for 40 days. What do you have to say to this latest development?
Yes, ma'am. No, we respect the decision of the court dismissing the case against Dr. Natividad. We just had coordinated with the unit who arrested Dr. Natividad, and they're already studying some of the legal options of the PNP relative to this case, ma'am.
What are these legal options?
We are studying the possibility of filing a motion for reconsideration to ask the court to reconsider the dismissal of the case. And this morning, ma'am, we received information that the prosecutor office has already filed a motion for reconsideration yesterday.
And what are the grounds for this motion for reconsideration?
Yes, ma'am. We don't have the copy as of now of the motion for reconsideration filed by the prosecutor's office because just this morning we only received the official copy of the resolution via email. So our lawyers, the PNP lawyers, are studying other legal recourse to at least file a motion for reconsideration to support the MR earlier filed by the prosecutor's office, ma'am.
Colonel Fajardo, here's the thing. On this program, Police Brigadier General Romeo Karamat said that everything was in order. We had him here on the program talking about the arrest of Doc Nati, and he did say that when the arrest happened, everything was in order, the subpoena, the manner by which the arrest was conducted, everything was in its proper place. How do you then explain the court's finding that there was a dismissal of Castro's, or there was a denial of Castro's substantive right to due process, that there was a cutting off of processes? How do you then explain that?
Yes, Ma'am Carmina, no, I also read the resolution issued by the court this morning, and it's very clear in the resolution when the court said that the due process of Dr. Natividad was not respected for purposes of preliminary investigation. And with due respect, Ma'am Carmina, no, the purpose of a preliminary investigation is within the ambit of authority of the prosecutor's office. The absence of the preliminary investigation and the absence of subpoena given to Dr. Natividad, again, the prosecutor should be in the better position to answer this because this is within the authority of the public prosecutor to conduct preliminary investigation by issuance of a subpoena, ma'am.
Yeah, but as the agency tasked to execute, shouldn't you have looked into this as well so that precisely this kind of a situation could be avoided?
Yes, ma'am. What we implemented during the arrest of Dr. Ranati, again, with due respect, is we just implemented the warrants of arrest issued by the court who has jurisdiction over the case on the questions of absence or failure of the prosecutor to conduct the required preliminary investigation and to issue subpoena for Dr. Natibida to be given the opportunity to answer all the allegations thrown against her. Again, ma'am, it should be addressed to the prosecutors, ma'am.
In that same interview that we had with Brigadier General Karamat, he also told us about 400 other people who stand accused. And he said in that interview, maybe several times, that these people are going to meet the same fate of Dr. Castro, that they are going to be arrested as well. What assurance can you give the public, Colonel Fajardo, that processes will be followed or that the same thing is not happening as we speak to these 400 other people on that same list?
We want to assure you, Ma'am Carmina, and other our countrymen, that the PNP will always respect the human rights and legal processes of our courts, and with respect to the other co-accused of Dr. Natividad. Again, the case has already been filed with the court, and whatever the cases that should be followed with respect to this case, and if there are other arrests that will be conducted by the PNP relating to this case, we want to assure the public that we will follow all the legal procedure that is existing under our laws and procedures, ma'am.
Remind us again, what are they being accused of?
The 400 plus accused is being charged for kidnapping and illegal detention, ma'am.
Are you also suspecting them to be members of the New People's Army?
That is my understanding, that all that were charged, that were included in that case, are all members of the communist terrorist group, ma'am.
And what is your proof?
I'm just basing my statement based on the documents provided to us. On the case folder, it was stated there that the names and people involved in this case are responsible for kidnapping the said victims, and the proof and the documentary evidence were included in the case filed before the court, ma'am.
And how does that tie them with the New People's Army?
Again, ma'am, no, we don't want to discuss the merits of the case, because the case has already been filed in court. It will be I just want to exercise caution and due prudence in discussing the merits of the case, because again, under the sub judice rule, we are not in the position to discuss the merits of the case, ma'am.
A while ago, you said that a motion for reconsideration has been filed already. Is that the same? Are you also saying, Colonel Fajardo, or is that your way of saying that whatever freedom Dr. Castro now has, that it's that she this freedom is on borrowed time, that you will still go after her?
Again, ma'am, we want to reiterate that just like Dr. Natividad, who exercised his legal remedies, the PNP is also not prohibited in exercising its legal course under our existing laws, ma'am.
Colonel Jean Fajardo, spokesperson of the Philippine National Police. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you for taking our call. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Several government agencies confirm the family of presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has yet to settle their tax debt of 203 billion pesos. Warren De Guzman reports.
Sa taxation natin, so ang gobyerno can only proud. Hindi naman kailangan reminder sa Malacanang. Nandyan yung BIR, so tanongin natin yung BIR, bakit hanggang ngayon hindi na kolekta yung estate tax.
President Rodrigo Roa Duterte did not mention any name in his recorded weekly address to the public, but his comment on uncollected estate taxes sparked a wave of confirmations on the matter of some 203 billion pesos in unpaid estate taxes owed by Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and the rest of the Marcos family. Bureau of Internal Revenue Commissioner Cesar Dulay told ANC the BIR is collecting estate tax and has demanded payment from the Marcos heirs. He noted this was also confirmed in a letter to Aksyon Demokratiko, the political party of Manila Mayor and candidate for President Isko Moreno. Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez added more details in his own confirmation to media, saying the Marcoses have not paid and that the BIR will continue working to sell Marcos assets to pay for the owed estate tax. Dominguez also noted the Marcos camp refuses to pay because of some pending litigation. The same was maintained in a statement by the Marcos family on the estate tax matter this month. However, a look at the Supreme Court ruling showed that the Marcoses had been making the same argument since the 1990s, even though the tax assessment was already ruled final and unappealable by the highest court in the Philippines. According to a 1997 Supreme Court ruling, at least 11 parcels of land of the Marcoses were forfeited in favor of the government in 1993 when no bidder showed up during the public auction for the properties. They were levied to satisfy the taxes due. Former Supreme Court Justice Antonio Carpio and former BIR Commissioner Kim Henares also confirmed the facts of the case and have even urged the current BIR leadership to quickly file criminal cases against the Marcoses for failing to pay the taxes due on the former dictator's estate. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
Retired Supreme Court Senior Associate Justice Antonio Carpio says President Duterte should do more than just take a swipe at the Marcos family over their unpaid estate taxes. According to Carpio, Duterte can order the BIR to sue the Marcoses if he wants to.
The president has control over all executive officials. He is the boss of the BIR examiner, BIR commissioner. He can preempt, make the decision for the BIR examiner. He can reverse the decision of the BIR commissioner. So he must do something more than just making a swipe, because you are talking of the lifeblood of the government. Would he rather collect from the Marcoses or borrow from World Bank, pay additional interest? The money is there if they just collect it.
Carpio also slammed former BIR officials for failing to collect the Marcos family's hefty estate taxes.
We should be asking the BIR commissioner during those during that period, from March 9, 1999, when the Supreme Court said it's final and executory, why they did not do anything. And if they did something, they should tell us what they did. They owe an explanation to the Filipino people. The government should have already auctioned off all the assets, including their house in San Juan, all their properties, and also send notices to all the banks. Any money in the name of Marcos Sr. or in the children coming from the account of Marcos Sr. should be frozen.
Presidential aspirant Senator Manny Pacquiao not discounting the possibility of forming an alliance with vice presidential candidate Senate President Vicente Soto III. That's after Pacquiao's running mate, Congressman Lito Atienza, gave the blessing in the event he can no longer continue his vice presidential bid following knee surgery. According to Atienza, he is seriously considering backing out of the race.
Abangan niyo na lang yung mga sunod na kabanata pag nakapag-usap na kami.
Sabi niyo eh.
Hindi pa kami nakapag-usap eh. Kaya sabi ko, abangan niyo na lang.
In a statement, Soto said he is humbled and will certainly appreciate the move. Meanwhile, Soto's running mate, presidential aspirant Senator Panfilo Lacson, rejects calls by Atienza to back out of the presidential race. Presidential candidate Vice President Leni Robredo is visiting Lanao del Norte, where she hopes to get the support of voters for the coming May 9 polls. Our very own Jervis Manan is there, and he now joins us with the latest. Jervis, over to you.
Yes, Carmina. Presidential aspirant Vice President Leni Robredo and her running mate, Senator Higupit Pangilinan, are visiting the provinces of Lanao today and tomorrow. They are currently in Lanao del Norte and will also be visiting Marawi City tomorrow for dialogues on peace and development in the area. VP Leni Robredo started the campaign with a dialogue with the Small Bansilon Farmers Association in Small Bansilon, Tangkal, Lanao del Norte. This is a group that has received assistance from the office of the Vice President in setting up a virgin coconut oil facility, which Robredo turned over to the farmers in January 2020. She also delivered a keynote speech at the academic symposium on the role of the academe, youth, traditional leaders in nation building in Mindanao State University, which gathered academics, consultants, and student leaders of Lanao del Norte. Here, they discussed policy proposals to promote awareness in culture and history to foster better understanding between peoples in Mindanao. Robredo also joined two people's rallies in different parts of Lanao del Norte. Iligan, Lanao del Norte was the first Mindanao city she visited when the campaign started. Tomorrow, the Vice President will also have a dialogue with the Bamboo Landers Multisectoral Workers Association in Lanao del Sur and will also be capping her tour of Lanao with a rally in Marawi City. Yesterday, Robredo also met with her supporters and local officials of Cagayan de Oro and they have expressed their support for Robredo's presidential bid. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jervis, for joining us today. Jervis Manahan there. Take care and keep safe. Well, Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso campaigning in Oriental Mindoro. Let's get the details now from our very own Katrina Domingo. Kat, over to you.
Carmina, Aksyon Demokratiko presidential candidate and Manila Mayor Isko Moreno Dumagoso is challenging the Marcos family to pay at least 23 billion pesos in estate taxes now. That's after Marcos lawyer admitted in an earlier interview that the Supreme Court ordered the family to pay with finality only 23 billion pesos and not 203 billion pesos as earlier alleged by Dumagoso's Aksyon Demokratiko. Lawyer George Briones earlier said that the remaining 180 billion in penalties and surcharges have yet to be finalized by tax officials. Dumagoso says if Marcos, the current presidential race front runner, is really for the poor, then he must not hesitate to initially pay at least 23 billion in tax juice so that the government can have additional funds for its aid program amid the rising cost of fuel and commodities here in the country. Now, Carmina, aside from this challenge, Dumagoso also urged voters here in Negros, or rather in Oriental Mindoro, to look at the candidate's track record to see which aspirant really has the capability to deliver significant change in the next 6 years. Now, after Dumagoso's town hall here, he is expected to woo more voters tonight in Calapan City, where his slate is expected to stage a grand campaign rally. Now, Carmina, just to give context for our viewers, Oriental Mindoro may prove to be a challenge for Dumagoso as the province's incumbent representative, Doy Leachon, earlier endorsed the presidential candidacy of Vice President Lenny Robredo. Now, in 2016, this province also delivered a landslide victory for Robredo by giving her about 134,000 votes, while Marcos only garnered about 70,000. Dumagoso says he is unfazed by these numbers and even by pre-election surveys, saying that by May 9, it is the public and not their local officials only who will decide who the next president of the Philippines will be. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there joining us live from Oriental Mindoro. Thanks, Kat. Take care. Keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, party list representatives fighting back after President Duterte slammed the country's party list system as a way for communists to infiltrate Congress. The chief executive also believes it is being misused by the elite so they can get elected to the House of Representatives. This claim did not sit well with lawmakers.
Huwag nating i-centralize yung party list doon sa mga binanggit ni Presidente. I'd rather focus on our own advocacy. Kasi yeah, kanya-kanya po kami.
Itong red tagging na ito ay act of desperation. In fact, squid tactic din para ilihis ang mamamayan sa tunay na isyu.
The Commission on Elections says it will look into President Duterte's allegations. Previously, poll watchdog Contradaya said that 120 out of the 177 party list groups were identified with political clans and big businesses. That's despite its main goal of giving representation to marginalized sectors in the Philippines. The Commission on Elections says it's more than 94% done with the printing of ballots that will be used in the May polls. It also found nearly 179,000 defective ballots that would have to be burned and replaced. As for the number of voters, Kamala Commissioner George Garcia says they have recorded a total of 6.9 million registrants. Make that new registrants. Meanwhile, he is appealing to relatives of those who have passed away to help update the COMELEC records.
Yung mga nagka-COVID, tapos nadala sa ibang lugar, doon nagamot, tapos doon po namatay, may posibilidad talaga na maaari hindi po sila natanggal. Kasi nga po, maghihintay po yung local COMELEC base sa batas ng certification mula sa civil registrar kung saan namatay po yung pong nagka-COVID. Pero at the same time, kung yung mismong pamilya naman ay nagbigay ng certification mula sa civil registrar na namatay talaga yung kanilang kaanak, sure po natatanggalin yon ng local COMELEC natin.
Philippine police end their two-day standoff with the bodyguards of a vice mayor in Abra province. The incident followed a running gun battle in which one of the bodyguards was killed. Angela Pagawisan reports.
The two-day standoff at the compound of Pilar Town Vice Mayor Jaja Disono between the police and armed men is over. More than a dozen assorted firearms owned by the vice mayor and her husband were turned over to the police. Disono's lawyer Raymond Fortun said all the weapons were surrendered to the police to undergo ballistics examination. The Abra police has also acquired a dash cam video taken from the van that sped through a police checkpoint in Pilar Town on Tuesday. The van was the second vehicle of the convoy of Vice Mayor Disono. Authorities say the first vehicle was not stopped because they knew it belonged to Disono. When they tried to stop the van, which was the second vehicle, it ignored the police.
Kanina may intelligence report na may mga kumakalat na nakabaril. Kaya yun po nasit at yung checkpoint na yun. The ramp on our police personnel there, or the police personnel, dalawa po nabangga nila, slightly nabangga, until nagpumutok po.
Authorities traded gunfire with armed men aboard the van before the vehicle entered the vice mayor's compound.
Nandun na rin yung abogado nila, they will just face whatever cases that the PNP will file against those involved in this incident.
Abra Governor Jocelyn Bernos and two others were allowed to enter the Disono compound to negotiate a surrender of the gunmen. But they failed. By Tuesday evening, scene of the crime operatives were allowed to enter the compound to process the van. They recovered the body of Disono's supposed bodyguard, identified as Sandy Boy Bermudo, a former Marine who went AWOL back in 2014. Police also recovered a rifle and a magazine registered under the name of Vice Mayor Disono.
The two-day standoff ended on Wednesday afternoon after negotiations led to the turnover of firearms belonging to the Disono family.
The province of Abra has consistently landed in the COMELEC list of election hotspots in previous elections. This year, Abra is ranked second to Sulu in terms of provinces with the most number of local candidates without rivals. But Pilar Town is not part of the list.
I hope that the Pilar incident is an isolated one. Let's give this a chance now.
Vice Mayor Jaja Disono and her brother, Mayor Mark Roland Sumera, are both seeking re-election. In 2017, their father, former Abra Vice Governor Rolando Sumera, was killed in Marikina City. Andrew Bagawisan, ABS-CBN News.
AirAsia offers to help cash-strapped Filipinos return to their hometown so they can cast their vote in the May elections. Under the airline company's Fly Home to Vote program, it would offer domestic flights for as low as 268 pesos as base fare and a free trip back to Manila. Booking of the election special rate is from April 4 to 10.
Isa sa mga dahilan kung bakit hindi nakakaboto yung mga kababayan natin, nakarehistro sila sa probinsya pero nagtatrabaho sila halimbawa dito sa Manila. So binibigyan natin sila ng kakayanan, ng oportunidad na makauwi dun sa kanilang probinsya, makaboto.
The worst of that is hindi lang sa hindi sila makauwi, pero hindi rin nila ma-encourage yung mga kasama nila na magbumoto kasi sila mismo hindi sila nakakaboto. Diba? So marami kaming alam na ganyan, lalo na po yung mga... isa yung mga hinabol namin ngayong campaign is yung makalipat ng registration election office.
AirAsia says the promo does not require proof of voter registration and is open to all. Going to take another break, or we're going to take a first break. Up ahead, the U.S. backs the Philippines in its latest tiff with China over the West Philippine Sea. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. We're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Ressa testifies on the attacks on press freedom and the bloody war on drugs in the Philippines before a U.S. Senate panel. Detained activist and community doctor Natividad Castro set free for lack of evidence. The police says a motion for reconsideration has been filed, adding proper procedure was followed in Castro's arrest. Retired Supreme Court Senior Associate Justice Antonio Carpio challenges President Duterte to order tax officials to go after the Marcoses over their unpaid estate taxes. And Ukraine and the West accuse Russia of using the ongoing peace talks to regroup and launch fresh attacks. Ukraine and the West accuse Russia of using the ongoing peace talks in Turkey to reorganize its forces and launch fresh attacks. Details in this report.
Russian forces bombed the outskirts of Kiev on Wednesday, a day after Russia said it was scaling back attacks there, a move the West dismissed as a ploy by Russian invaders to regroup. Intensified bombardment could be heard on Wednesday morning. In an address to the European Committee of the Regions, Kiev Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said battles were taking place near the Ukrainian capital.
We received yesterday information right now the Russian forces move away from Kiev. It's not true. Whole night we listen to sirens, this means Iraqis attack, and we listen to a huge explosion east of Kiev and north of Kiev. It means battles there. The people died, still died.
Reuters journalists near the Kiev suburb of Irpin heard frequent shelling and explosions on the ground and in the air. The attacks came just one day after Russia said it would curtail operations near Kiev and the northern city of Chernihiv to increase mutual trust for peace talks. Ukrainians who fled spoke of shells landing in Irpin and bodies in the streets. Yulia Kalmutska said she hid with 37 other people in a basement. They came under fire by Russian machine guns and the building caught fire.
I buried four people close to me. My father. I buried two young guys who were my neighbors. They couldn't reach the entrance of the building and got shot by Russian troops. And an elderly woman who was cooking and came under fire.
Ukraine and Western leaders had cautioned that Moscow's apparent peace gesture at Tuesday's talks in Istanbul was a cover for reorganizing forces that had failed to take Kyiv or any other major city nearly 5 weeks into an invasion.
We have seen over the last 24 hours the repositioning of a small percentage of the troops that and the battalion tactical groups that Russia had arrayed against Kyiv, probably in the neighborhood of 20% of what they had, they are beginning to reposition. If the Russians are serious about de-escalating, because that's their claim here, then they should send them home. But they're not doing that, at least not yet.
Irpin itself was recaptured by Ukrainian forces this week. Reuters journalists who entered on Tuesday saw Ukrainian troops patrolling an abandoned ghost town of ruined buildings with the body of an elderly man and a woman lying on the streets. In an overnight address, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky made clear he took nothing Moscow said at face value.
Ukrainians are not naive people. Ukrainians have already learned, both during these 34 days of invasion and over the past 8 years of the war in Donbass, that only a concrete result can be trusted.
The United Nations said on Wednesday that the number who have fled the country had risen above 4 million. More than half of those refugees are children, and the rest mostly women.
Meanwhile, Russia is studying a proposal to price all its energy and commodity exports in rubles. The move is meant to boost the Russian currency and blunt the impact of Western sanctions. President Vladimir Putin already issued an order last week for Russian gas, which accounts for 40% of European needs, to be paid in rubles instead of dollars or euros. That announcement sent commodity prices soaring. Meanwhile, Moscow also approved parallel imports, which allows retailers to import products from abroad without the trademark owner's permission. The move comes as global brands curb their activity in Russia in line with Western sanctions. In other news, America backs the Philippines in its latest tiff with China as it rejects Beijing's aggression in the West Philippine Sea. U.S. Department of State Counselor Derek Chollet reiterated, China has no lawful claim in areas judged by the arbitral tribunal to be part of Manila's exclusive economic zone. Chollet's statements come after another incident involving Philippine and China ships took place early this month near Scarborough Shoal.
Our view has been very clear that the PRC has no lawful claim to the area determined by the arbitral tribunal to be part of the Philippines. Philippines EEZ and the continental shelf. We stand by our Philippine allies, and we will uphold the Article 4 of our mutual defense treaty. And we very much reject Chinese aggression in the South China Sea, their coercion, their attempts to create, we would say facts on the ground, but facts in the water as well. And we will uphold our commitments to one another.
Retired Supreme Court Senior Associate Justice Antonio Carpio says the American official statement is crucial in deterring China's renewed aggression in the West Philippine Sea.
My take is that it's a message to China that the Mutual Defense Treaty includes the territorial sea of Scarborough Shoal, and if you attack a Philippine vessel there, that will trigger the operation of the treaty. And to me, that's the message. That's why they are not attacking, because they don't want us to invoke the treaty.
The World Health Organization strikes an optimistic tone as it releases the third and possibly last update of its COVID-19 Strategic Preparedness and Response Plan. The plan lays out three possible scenarios for how the pandemic could evolve this year. According to the WHO, the most likely scenario is that the severity of the disease would reduce over time as immunity increases due to vaccination and infection. But in the worst-case scenario, the global body sees a more virulent variant emerging, wherein deaths may occur and periodic boosting for vulnerable groups could be required. The organization called on countries to continue or increase virus surveillance capabilities to allow for early warning signs. Switzerland will say goodbye to its remaining COVID-19 restrictions on Friday, April 1st. The move includes lifting the requirement to wear masks in public transport and health facilities, as well as removing the requirement to self-isolate for 5 days after a positive test. Infections in the country have remained at a high level in recent days, with more than 16,400 new cases reported on Wednesday. But only 165 people needed hospital treatment. 69% of Switzerland's 8.6 million population are fully vaccinated. Still ahead, the Film Academy reveals more details on the slapping incident during the Oscars ceremony. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. News in the U.S., a Republican senator throws her support behind President Joe Biden's Supreme Court nominee, Ketanji Brown, after make that further boosting her prospects of becoming the first black woman to serve on America's top judicial body. This report.
Senator Susan Collins says she will support Ketanji Brown Jackson for the U.S. Supreme Court, becoming the first Republican to throw her support behind President Joe Biden's nominee. The senator from Maine said in a statement Wednesday that she reviewed Jackson's record, watched her testify during her Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing last week, and met her twice in person, and concluded the judge possesses the, quote, experience, qualifications, and integrity to serve in the lifetime post. Collins' support further boosts Jackson's prospects of becoming the first black woman to serve on the top U.S. judicial body. In her statement, Senator Collins also lamented what she called a disturbing trend of politicizing the judicial nomination process. Quote, no matter where you fall on the ideological spectrum, anyone who has watched several of the last Supreme Court confirmation hearings would reach the conclusion that the process is broken.
Looking at sexual images of children
during Jackson's confirmation hearing last
week, child pornography,
several Republicans repeatedly and dramatically accused her of being lenient in her previous role as a federal trial court judge in sentencing child pornography offenders.
They were asked for.
Senator, I've answered this question many times.
Jackson defended her sentencing record, and American Bar Association witnesses at the hearing rejected the allegations that she was soft on crime. Democrats called the attacks unfair and undignified. With a simple majority needed for confirmation in the evenly divided Senate, Jackson will get the job if Democrats remain united, even without Collins' support. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said last week the chamber was on track to confirm Jackson before its expected break for Easter on April 8th.
The Philippine national government's debt hits a new high in February. It jumped to nearly 12.1 trillion pesos last month. That's up 64 billion pesos from January. Of the total debt, 30% were sourced externally, while the rest were domestic borrowings. The Philippine government has been borrowing heavily in the past 2 years to fund its pandemic response. In business, Fitch Solutions sees the Philippine economy as among the top three outperformers in Asia, along with India and Vietnam. It expects the country's economy to grow above 6% this year, still below government's target range of a 7-9% growth. But it's better than the group's growth forecast for the global economy, which was revised downward to 3.6% from 4.1%. Fitch Solutions notes sanctions imposed on Russia due to its invasion of Ukraine had an impact on global commodity prices, pushing inflation higher. But it adds Asian economies are better positioned for recovery this year.
Asia was actually a region that was held back in terms of growth last year, in large part because many of the economies rely heavily on tourism, but also because Asian economies and Asian governments had much more stringent policies with regard to COVID-19. What we're seeing this year is, as many of these economies start transitioning to a more endemic policy, some of these economies are picking up pace. So your Malaysia's, Philippines, Vietnam, for example, are going to see growth accelerate. And also see inflation has been a little bit lower, in part due to that weaker demand story. And so monetary policy has been less hawkish in Asia. And so that should benefit some of the economies.
In sports, the rift between Philippine Olympic pole vaulter EJ Obiena and Philippine Athletics and Track and Field Association is finally over. That's according to the Philippine Sports Commission. In a statement, the PSC said both sides agreed to settle their differences and that Batafa will now endorse Obiena in the upcoming Southeast Asian Games and the World Outdoor Athletics. The rift between Obiena and Batafa stemmed from a funding issue related to the alleged non-payment of the pole vaulter's coach. The issue dragged on for months and resulted in Batafa excluding Obiena from its initial pool for the SEA Games. In entertainment news, comedian Chris Rock comes out swinging, but not against Will Smith. In his first stand-up performance since Sunday's Oscars, to kick off his show, Rock told the audience in Boston he is still processing what happened and that he had no plans of addressing the issue during the performance. The world gasped during the recent Oscar awards when eventual best actor Will Smith slapped Rock for making a joke about his wife's short hair or bald head. In a new statement, the Academy apologized to Rock over the incident. It also now claims Smith was asked to leave the awards show, but he refused. The organizers say Smith faces suspension or even expulsion pending the result of its investigation. Well, it's official. The two stars of the global hit drama series Crash Landing on You have tied the knot. The agencies of actor Seon Bin and Song Ye Jin made the confirmation. The agencies add the ceremony is private with only their families and close friends invited. In consideration of the ongoing pandemic, the couple has been dating for 2 years. They appeared first on the screen together in the film adaptation, or in the 2018 film The Negotiation. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.